The McCartney McAlphabet, Part 2. But anyway, from something a bit bland to something I would say that isn't bland at all, selection number 5, which is Friends to Go.
I've been waiting on the other side for your friends to leave so I don't have to hide. I prefer they didn't know. So I've been waiting on the other side for your friends to go. I've been sliding down a slippy slope. I've been climbing up a slowly burning rope. But the flame is getting low. I've been waiting on the other side for your friends to go. You never need to worry about me. I'll be fine on my own. Someone else can worry about me. I've spent a lot of time on my own. I've spent a lot of time on my own. I've been waiting till the danger passed.
I don't know if this is the luck of the draw, but I've been jammy in that I've got two songs to cover on this podcast that feature on the 2005 album Chaos and Creation in the Backyard.
You did also get For You, so it's...
Well, true. and you've got a corker coming up next,
yes.
But I won't give spoilers for that yet. I love this one. Do you know what's interesting, though, about Chaos and Creation is I could have had any song off that album and I would have said, I love this one. You know, it's the album that keeps on giving.
That's the thing I said about it, often ending in like the top three or top five of his albums. It's such a good album and such a variety of stuff on it.
Yeah. Again, so he's done everything on there, I think, other than production.
Even right down to the flugelhorn he plays in the background.
Flugelhorn, yeah.
I know.
Tambourines, shakers, everything. Jammy. So I was reading an interview in which he has said that he sort of evoked his inner George Harrison and that he had kind of put himself in this headspace of whether it was like afterwards, I wondered if George was in the room with me. But he said what I had intended to do when I sat down was, what would George write? Where would he go next? How would he do this? How would he go about that? And then he sort of said, retrospectively, I do feel like he was there with me in some way or another. It sort of wrote itself accidentally, but in that vein. And I think you can hear it. And I think that had come to mind before I'd even read that interview. Maybe I hadn't thought George especially. I just felt Beatles-y to a degree.
I do know exactly what he means, though.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, some of the passing chords in it, or even the, you know, climbing up a slowly burning rope.
Yes.
There's definitely things that you might think would come from George. That slight sort of cynicism, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And, sort of melodically, but also, as you say, in the lyrics. And I love that section, them sliding down a slippy slope, climbing up a slowly burning rope.
Yeah, it's very good.
I love what that, which again, this is like top quality Macca lyric writing when you consider that sometimes, as with the last song, not terrible, but some jarring lines or obvious rhymes in there.
It's just very average, isn't it, the last song? Whereas this is very, as this whole album is, quite sort of high end, quite interesting, very interesting melodically, very interesting lyrically, definitely.
Yeah, and I think going back to that, you know, linking it to sort of Beatles or George, they are quite clever and, like you said, maybe not cynical, but just kind of, yeah, not the usual optimism that you might expect from more of an up-tempo Macca track. And I wonder, again, everyone's going to draw sort of references to Heather just because of the time it was written. But as soon as I heard it, I was just, I instantly thought, oh, she's bound to have some horrific friends, you know, coming round to tea. And a real like two fingers up sort of message without it being, there's no spice in there. It's just, this is how I'm feeling. I'm over there, the other side of the room. I'm just waiting for them to go. But
yeah.
It's kind of a factual, but quite quite enchanting.
Well, it's that I prefer they didn't know. I think it's more in this idea of he is literally sort of hiding, waiting, you know, so maybe it's like a sort of secret relationship or whatever, and he's just waiting for them to go, you know, and that's the sort of image, which is just an unusual and interesting way to write a song that is sort of, loosely speaking, a love song.
And I love the harmonies, you know, the line... I spend a lot of time on my own. I'm coming up the line now.
You don't have to worry about me. I'll be fine on my own.
Yes.
Someone else can worry about me. I spend a lot of time on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like most of the album. It's a really well-constructed song. And it's one of those songs you might have forgotten about. Mm. It's one that I've always liked. But obviously, when we made our selections for this podcast and you listen through them again, you go, God, it is a really good song, isn't it? It is a really good album. You know, things like Fine Line I hear quite a lot because it's a bit more central. And it has featured on a couple of, one compilation at least. Friends to Go is one of those sort of middle the album songs, really.
Yeah.
But it's just good. The build of the production, it all starts very small, isn't it? The first verse, just the acoustic and the shaker. Then the next one has a bit more rhythm guitar, piano, cymbals. Then the lead guitar comes in and the drums come in, you know. It's a very gradual thing. I tell you, if we're talking about the Beatles, the thing it reminds me of is Rubber Soul.
Yeah.
It's the style of song of some of the songs that are on that album, I would say. Not particularly the production, really, but maybe some of the backing vocals, the sort of waiting for your friends to go, your friends to go, you know, that's quite sort of Beatles. But also with the George thing, it does sound to me quite like late George. So I'm talking about things like Brainwashed, the last album, the posthumous album. You know, it's got that sort of, it's not that it's cynical, it's just you feel like the person that is singing has cynicism in them. It's just got that sort of, because George was quite sort of, his melodies were quite tight and quite, so they didn't necessarily cover a long range. It's got that sort of feel, but it's one of those songs where you go, it just feels right, it just feels complete. Yeah, it's a really good song on a really good album, which again, he's never played it live. He would sound check it around the time, again on that The Us tour in the US, and you see him play it on the Space Within Us film as a sound check with the band, and it really works. But at the same time, I can kind of see why it didn't end up into the gigs, because it's a bit too sort of casual a song to work in that sort of environment.
Yeah, and I think in contrast to the last one, which we said it was a bit like, are we not at the end of the song yet? This one sort of feels like, I'm not sure the length of the song, but it feels like it's over really quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And because it's a gradual build, it's not a story that bores you. It definitely keeps your interest. He also played it when he did Chaos and Creation at Abbey Road, which is the thing where he's just basically in Studio 2 with an invited audience around him, just sort of demonstrating how he recorded the album. But he plays this song just on an acoustic and sings it, and he did do that on a couple of the sort of promo TV stuff around that time, and it works well. You know, it's also a song that works well. I think that's where the George thing comes for me. It's the amount of chords that are in it.
Yeah,
the chords follow the melody and change the passing chords all the way through it. It's a bit like the style of, even though they didn't write it, Till There Was You, the stuff that George plays on that, the Beatles song, and lots of sort of sixth chords and fifth chords and that sort of thing. It's a sort of intelligent, clever, well-constructed song, which is the sort of thing that George would do. It's interesting when you just hear him play, even with an acoustic, all the sort of suggested, the implied harmonies. I mean, it still works just in playing it with acoustic, because it's just, again, a musically interesting song. It's not Figure of Eight, which is basically just a sort of jam around, you know, E or A or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't stop moving, but without sounding contrived.
Yeah, no, it's not contrived, you're right, but it does feel like a crafted, like, you know, he's crafted intentionally well-crafted song.
Yeah, absolutely. But in a way that then feels natural, so which is quite a clever thing to do. I guess it's sort of ambitious. There's a lot of stuff for the songs on that album. They're sort of ambitious in terms of their melodies, in terms of what's happening chord-wise. It's not, this is what I mean, I keep going back to that song Who Cares or whatever off Egypt Station. There's a lot of stuff where he just phones it in and it's fine. Albums like this, and also because his voice is in good form as well. It's a good mixture of an interesting melody, an interesting chorus, and like you say, well-crafted. It's not throwaway. And I think that's why that album is so good, because it does so many things like that, but in lots of different styles, you know. And also it's really well-produced as well. I think Nigel Godrich really brought some good stuff out of Paul by making him work a bit harder.
Have you seen the, I think it's like Live at Abbey Road version that he's done of this? That's the one
that's
that
the thing I was saying, Case and Creation, yeah. Abbey Road. Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah.
Because I just, I've just noted down when I was making notes on that earlier that apparently he like does something in that performance that isn't in the album version. Towards the end of the song, he repeats two lines that aren't in the album version. And instead of modulating from B6 to B7, on like I'm waiting on the other side the final time he sings that, apparently he just maintains the B7 chord.
Well, there you go.
Which is that just was he just kind of I can't remember what I do here, so I'm just gonna make it up, or is he just doing that inventive thing that he's just I'm gonna mess around with it live as well because that's what I do.
Yeah, I think it possibly is one of those sort of accidental things.
I'll be waiting on the other side. I'll be waiting on the other side for your friends to go.
Particular performance documentary thing, he does do things quite differently because, for example, he describes it when he plays Lady Madonna as an old friend in new clothes, and then he plays a sort of halftime version of it, so like a sort of bluesy halftime version of that. There are various other songs that he does different stylistically. He does How Kind of You, he has the build up of loops, so Nigel Godrich is playing the loops in the background while he plays on an acoustic. It's the sort of thing when he did the Electric Proms, you know, which again I was lucky to see. I hoped, I mean, he did have a string section there, but I hoped he would do that kind of thing where he's just showing you how it works because he's really good at it and it comes across really well. It's also the gig going back to this one, the Chaos and Creation Abbey Road, where he has the Bill Black double bass there and he plays a bit of Heartbreak Hotel on it and sings it. But yeah, I mean, imagine that's the perfect place. So you're in Studio 2, you know, sat around him while he does all this stuff and demonstrates all this equipment basically in the room where all those wonderful things happened.
Wow.
And I tell you what's really interesting, there's a bit at the beginning just before he walks in where he's having a chat with someone outside the door and he's just sort of talking about an old story and he goes oh no I'm on and just walks on and sort of it's the effortlessness with which okay I'm going to go in that room now and demonstrate all this stuff, you know, things that he's not done before live, but he's just really comfortable, you know, and it's just an interesting thing to see, I guess, because he would be comfortable in that room because of all the things he's done there.
Yeah.
But it was a good period, I think, despite the sort of Heather stuff. It was a good period of his life, I think, creatively and sort of personally. And it was good to see, you know. And it's nice to hear that song in that environment. But again, it's not one he's played live outside of that, which is a shame because it's a good song.
Yeah.
Linked to the George thing, I read a story recently about he has a tree on his driveway in London, which was a tree that was given to him by George.
Wow.
And he quite often, when he goes out, you know, says hello to George and chats to him there. So he sort of sees it as like that's where he is now. And I think that's a bit like this song, you know, it's like entering into that sort of that old friend. And it's sort of a shame in a way, actually, because I know sort of like in the mid 80s when their relationship wasn't really great, and then linking into the early anthology stuff, there's an interview where you can hear George Harrison saying, oh, Paul sort of said he might be interested in writing some songs with me, oh, he's never shown an interest before, I wonder why he is now, you know, and he's a bit sort of arch about it. So it's sort of a shame because this song was like a few years after George died in 2001. It's a shame because, you know, Paul writes this sort of loving sort of pastiche in George's voice, but he never got to hear it. But then maybe he did because maybe he was helping him write it. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's a nice idea, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's Friends to Go.
Okay. I won't say too much about my opinion, but I will say that this is this next one is a high point for me off the particular album that it's from. I will let you introduce the album. And the song is Footprints.
outside. An old man gathers wood. Can you see me sitting here? His mind is somewhere else. Left out in the cold. He won't sit by my fire. He says he likes it in the snow, where footprints never go. He likes it in the snow. It's getting dark outside. Someone waiting there. Is he living on his own? Where footprints never go. He likes it in the snow. White blanket hiding the traces of tears she didn't see.
This song, as I think we mentioned before, or was certainly an album we've talked about tonight, is off the 1986 album Press to Play, which is a little bit maligned. Although at the time, not so much so. I believe, like, for example, Rolling Stone really liked it. People were sort of into it at the time. It's probably one of the least like that album songs on it, or certainly it's a song that's least affected by the sort of 80s production. It's more your sort of standard thing. And I think if it weren't for the sort of slightly strange synth down the octave panpipe solo. if you maybe lost that and replaced it with, because there's lovely like Spanish guitar, acoustic guitar that's playing throughout it, it would be just that little bit better. But it's a really beautiful, again, beautiful constructed song, lovely images in the lyrics. And it's also one of a number of songs that he co-wrote with Eric Stewart, who is the guy from 10cc. He was also a member of Wayne Fontana and the Mindbenders. He sang Groovy Kind of Love, the most well-known version of that, in the 60s before Phil Collins came along with it. And he wrote and sang I'm Not In Love, the 10cc song. Now, and it's a funny thing, because I know that a lot of this album, Press to Play, is co-writes with Eric Stewart. But I hadn't really sort of clocked. He's kind of like a bit of a secret collaborator with Paul in the sort of early to mid 80s period. Because not only does he co-write six songs on that album, Stranglehold, Pretty Little Head, Move Over Busker, Angry, However Absurd, and this one, Footprints. There are also additional songs that were on the CD version, Right Away and Tough on a Tightrope. He co-wrote those. But also he played on Tug of War, the album, on Pipes of Peace, the album. He's in the film Give My Regards to Broad Street, and he's on the music from that. And he also, Eric Stewart, features in the videos for So Bad and Take It Away. So he was really quite heavily involved with Paul at this period. And the story sort of goes that he was hoping or expecting that he was going to be producing this album, Press to Play, for McCartney. And then various things happened, various other people came in, and it didn't kind of work out the way he wanted. But apparently this song began with basically Eric Stewart arriving at the studio. I think it was Hog Hill Mill, McCartney's studio. And the first thing he said as he arrived was, "It's beautiful outside." And Paul went, "Oh, that's a great line to begin a song." And then they did it. And I believe the story goes, they sort of alternated lyrics. So one of them said, "It's beautiful outside." The other one says, "An old man gathers wood. Can you see me sitting there? His mind is somewhere else." So they were just like sparring with ideas for lines for songs, for the song, which is kind of amazing, really, because it just perfectly fits together. It's a very, you can really see the image that they're creating. And it's very sort of typical Paul. Paul is interested in people, isn't he? He's interested in observing people. He's interested in telling stories, creating a character. And that's what this song very much does. And I believe originally it was just more about the magpie, but then they changed it to an old man. But it's really sort of affecting. It's really, really beautiful, I think. And also, again, it's this thing about ambitious songwriting. It's unusual. There's unusual chord sequences. Like, so, for example, when it goes into the sort of middle eight or the bridge, his heart keeps aching in the same old way, that part. There's like a spinet playing a lovely sort of arpeggio on it. It's all sort of unusual. Do you know what I mean? Unusual chords. And even like where it ends in an unresolved way, there's unusual even like jumps in the chorus melody of the Where Footprints Never Go. He likes it in the snow. It's just unusual chord changes, while also feeling really natural and really creating that sort of image of, I mean, again, beautiful image. He likes it in the snow where footprints never go. The idea of what's lost in the snow, what you don't see, is such a strong, beautiful image, I think. And it's one of those songs that is sort of criminally underrated and not known.
Yeah, do you know, I was listening to it on YouTube earlier while making some more notes, and I was just shocked that, I mean, there's a few different videos that have been posted up there, but considering it's Paul McCartney, the views, are, I mean, one of them had like 500 views and zero comments or one or two comments, and I was just very shocked at that. I think this song, for me, not just a highlight of that album, but, it's up there with solo Macca ballad highlights. Okay, yes, you said it. Again, we use that phrase of the time, but...
But I don't think this one really is, actually. I think aside from that panpipe bit, it's more subtle.
It's not overproduced in the same way as the rest of the album is.
Yeah.
It could not be on that album and it wouldn't surprise me.
In fact, I would say this one and Only Love Remains, both songs from that album that are really beautiful, underrated songs that go against the opinion of what that album is.
That album is, yeah, definitely. And, it's so dreamy. It's one of those songs you just feel you could melt in and just stay in it forever. And that Spanish guitar...
Which is played by him. That's him playing.
Yeah. It. Oh, it's got a real sparkle to it. It feels almost magical, like fairy tale. Or even, maybe not a fairy tale, it almost feels like it could be a Christmas song, but like a midwinter, not a sleigh bells ringing sort of song. Obviously, you've got the imagery of the snow. It just feels musically like it belongs, you know, as a song you're listening to.
I could imagine an animation to this in the style of, say, The Snowman. It creates a really beautiful image. But yeah, it does feel, I know what you mean, Christmassy, but it's just, it's very sort of genuine, isn't it? And very convincing as a story, you know. And also, I tell you what, there is a sort of sense that's kind of slightly sad, it's slightly bleak again, but in a way that's a lot less so, like we looked at From a Lover to a Friend earlier on, which is more depressingly bleak. The sort of imagery of this man's life, his heart keeps aching in the same old way. You kind of have a feeling that she might come back someday, you know. There's a sadness to it. But there's also a sort of, when he's putting the food out for the birds or the idea of the footprints and stuff, there's someone who is quite, well, I picture like a sort of much, well, it says an old man, doesn't it, but a much older man who's at the stage of his life where he's quite sort of content with what he's got. He's comfortable within himself. And it's not, because again, McCartney gets, even by John, sort of attacked a bit for his storytelling songs. But this is just so, the story's perfect, isn't it? And it's not twee.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's almost got that Jenny Wren feel to it.
Yes.
Without being, like you say, without trying to be, you know, him writing that type of song sometimes feels like it's almost painting by numbers. That's, I'll fall to that because I know I'm really good at that and I sit comfortably in that genre almost. Whereas this... And the fact that it was co-written with Eric Stewart. I like that conversation, that back and forth. I think that works really nicely. And the magpie imagery, like you said, lyrically, it's very beautiful. I like the line, white blanket hiding the traces of paths he didn't take, as you've mentioned already.
Which is a great image, isn't it? And the idea of the snow creating the option where any path is possible. So it sort of masks what might be the natural path that is there. Yeah. It's really very clever, isn't it?
Yeah. Sort of lyrics that seem simple on first read, but actually, like as you say, they're very clever and really draw you in. And you've mentioned about the album getting a lot of slack. And I mean, it's incredibly... underrated, that whole album.
And we said, you know, like I said about maybe preferring Off the Ground or the production of Off the Ground to Flowers in the Dirt. Likewise, I would say definitely I prefer this album, Press to Play, to both of them.
Me too.
In terms of, like, I know that some of it's throwaway, you know, and I'm not, I think you don't mind it, but I'm not very fond of Talk More Talk. I think that's a bit, bit much.
A bit too much in the tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, I sort of don't mind the weirdness, but it's the actual, I tell you what, the actual song itself is very like what we said about Figure of Eight. Uh-huh. It's just, he's kind of making up. You get the impression that he wrote it in real time. Mm. Whereas something like this, I mean, it's just got so much depth, hasn't it?
You mean you don't find depth in Talk More Talk, Chat More Chat?
Birds of a feather are worn in a hat. No, I really don't. I'll be honest with you. I think it's a bit shit. Whereas Press, I don't mind Press. I think that's quite fun. I think it's a good pop song. But this is, yeah, this is high-end McCartney. This is like Some Days or, you know, one of those songs. Mm. And I like how it was written, and I like the idea of Eric Stewart coming in with, oh, it's beautiful outside. Mm. And it is a really good starting line for a song. And also what's quite interesting, so this song was produced by Hugh Padgham, who is a very heavily connected with, again, with the 80s sound. He was basically pioneered the sort of gated drum sound, the sort of In the Air Tonight, which he produced, style of drums. And he worked with Peter Gabriel, worked with Phil Collins, Killing Joke, interestingly, which is again with Youth from The Fireman and The Human League, even McFly he's worked with. But this song doesn't, again, it sort of manages to have a broad sort of tonal wash without being too 80s, while having, I mean, again, I'm not so keen on the sort of what I refer to as like panto chimes. That I don't really know what they're called, where you scale down the chimes, just not them with your hands. That starts to edge on the side of a bit twee. And again, like I say, the weird down the octave panpipe solo, which I'm really not sure about. but I mean, all that to one side, it's a wonderful song. And it's one that you can guarantee almost that, you know, the majority of people will not know this song. It's a hidden gem. I've written that down. And again, obviously, like many of his songs, never been played live. It just existed for the time they wrote it and the session, and that was it. Which is a shame. And also the other reason I like this sort of album, this sort of time, again, his voice is in a very good place when he sings this. I suppose if you compare it again to From a Lover to a Friend, which, okay, he's trying again to do a stylistic thing, using the sort of feeling of the song in the style of how he sings it. But this one, he's still got that really sweet sound to his voice. And it's almost, I guess, slightly emotionless. It's a sort of, someone is observing. It's like a mindfulness thing. Someone is observing this man doing his thing without passing any real comment on it. It's like a director. It's like a film. You're watching a film and it's telling the story for you, but it's not too overladen by opinion. It's just there. And to write a song like that, that's a very difficult thing to do. Yeah, it's very good. Very good indeed. 5 stars.
Definitely. And I do wonder if, like you said, he was sort of becoming, you know, if you look at like the artwork of Press to Play, it feels like a 1930s, 1940s, you know, one of those.
Well, they used an original, I forget who the photographer is, I don't have the notes in front of me, who did it, but it was a classic old school Hollywood photographer using the original camera.
Yeah.
The only thing I think that dates it slightly is they've the 80s hair. Do you know what I mean? They've just got slightly too 80s hair that puts you in that place. But yeah, sorry, yeah, carry on.
I just wonder if that was the perception. Okay, he's middle-aged now. And oh, look at this album cover. It's black and white. And oh, there's quite a few ballads on there. And I don't know, was it just that almost like, I mean, I'm not comparing Gary Barlow to Paul McCartney, although I think Gary Barlow's a good songwriter. But, you know, suddenly he was the fat one that left Take That, and Robbie Williams was the better one. And even though Gary Barlow, probably the early releases he did as a solo artist, were a lot better.
Yes.
You know, and now I think he's, in terms of songwriter, a lot better than Robbie Williams, but I don't really think much of Robbie Williams anyway.
No.
But, you know, it's like a little bit like Paul McCartney. Mm. Public opinion is he's a prat. That's just, my mind is made up about that.
Yes. And it can't be changed by any evidence to the contrary. That's the thing,
And it's like the music on the whole of that album, as you've just said, is, well, for the majority of it, it's far from dull.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And the things that are of, I keep using that phrase, of the time, but they aren't contrived. It's convincing. Again, apart from something like Talk More Talk, which is it's just crap. Yeah. Crap, more crap. You know, I really like However Absurd. I think that's a really clever song. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of interesting. And, you know, you say middle-aged. He was 43. He was 43 when he made that album. So basically our age.
Yes.
Yeah, ridiculous. But yeah, great song. And if you don't know it, listen to it. But just ignore the panpipes, which is a good sort of maxim for life.
Absolutely.
If there are panpipes, ignore them. Get away from them. If there's a guy outside, I would say Woolworths, they don't exist anymore, but playing panpipes, walk away. Don't head that way. But yeah, lovely song. So we move from Footprints to our penultimate selection. This is Find My Way.
Well, I can find my way. I know my left from right, because we never close. I'm open day and night. I walk towards the light. I'm open round the clock. I don't get lost at night.
You never used to be afraid of days like these, but now you're overwhelmed by your anxieties. Let me help you out. Let me be your guide. I can help you reach the love you feel inside.
Yes, so Find My Way features on the, as Macca himself put it, his Rockdown album.
Yeah, recorded in Rockdown. I like that.
In Rockdown, yeah. I am, of course, talking about McCartney 3. And
McCartney 3, The Search for Spock. If it was McCartney 2, it'd be Back in the Habit. Sister Act. But yeah, sorry.
So it wasn't a single in like the traditional sense, although it even had a promotional film behind it.
There are two, in fact. We'll get to the second one a little bit later on, but yeah.
Oh, yes, we will. I meant to say at the beginning, because I am going to touch upon it, it's not just covering up to 2020. We're going to go into 2021 a little bit in a second.
That's very true. Very true, yeah.
Yeah, no, I love this. Much like Chaos in Creation, I've got a lot of time for McCartney 3. So, you know, taking the same kind of approaches as with McCartney 1, McCartney 2, this was done completely at home. Obviously, difference being it was over lockdown. But you can hear it all over this record, all over the album, but particularly on this song.
Yeah.
Him having fun kind of noodling and playing and creating in his home studio. And there's like a relaxed manner in the work that he does when he's recording at home.
Yeah, definitely.
It feels different. And there's a lot more, again, I don't want to talk about the album too much, but there is a lot more of him just talking about being a homebody and the stuff that he gets up. What's the first track on McCartney 3?
It's Long-Tailed Winter Bird.
Yeah, so that sort of thing.
I'm amazed that I remembered that title, because it's a bit like Strawberries, Oceans, Whatever is Forest, you know. As I'm surprised myself with those words coming out. But anyway, yeah, thanks for the test.
Yeah, so recorded at home, and he recorded two distinct drum tracks and added two distinct bass parts. And I think, am I right in saying that he captured the guitar parts at sort of different varying tape speeds?
Yeah, he used the old the Brenel quarter inch tape machine. So this is the one that he used to use to record loops in the 60s for things like Tomorrow Never Knows. But yeah, you can tell it's got that sort of sound. But also, like, and this is, I think, what you're saying about him recording at home, even though like a lot of his solo stuff has been recorded in that studio, there are certain things, and this album particularly and this song, it's really true to it, where like it's very direct, sort of very honest, and the production is very simple, but you can see why it became an album in the McCartney 1, 2, 3 franchise.
Yeah.
He's got that same sort of sense of playing around, the sort of lead guitar loops on this, like you were saying about the Long-Tailed Winter Bird thing. It's very much laying down a part, doing another thing, and like you were saying about the drums. So it's that same sort of approach he took when he was recording Coming Up, or when he was recording Check My Machine, you know. But what's really nice is it's the times when he seems just really content with what he's doing. He's not trying to do any, and we've said this a lot, and it's a bit of a cliche, but not really trying to do anything. With things like Egypt Station, there is more of a sense of trying. And in doing that, like you say, some of it sort of fails a bit, or not fails, but it's, you know, it's too long. There's just a little bit too much going on there that doesn't need to be there. Caesar Rock is one I remember particularly again. Whereas with this, I mean, this song I think is a bit throwaway, but I don't know. There's just something more direct about it. And also because you read the stories about when he was recording this album, a lot of it was, so he was sort of staying with Mary, with his daughter. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I'll go to the studio. It's in sort of my, you know, estate, essentially. And then I'll go back and I'll play what I did to Mary and her husband when we have some mm-hmm. food later on. And that was the approach, you know, making the most of lockdown, really, in a really lovely, positive, even though this song touches on anxieties, it's, do you know what I mean? I wish that my attitude when lockdown hit was like that. And admittedly, I don't have his studio set up that I could do that. Uh-huh. But it was just, it's like he's tinkering, isn't he? He's tinkering for his own entertainment. Mm-hmm. And when he thinks no one is listening, because maybe like McCartney 2, he wasn't going to play it to anyone, it actually is all the better.
Yeah, gives him the freedom to just not care and do whatever sort of whim he wants to follow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I like that it fits in the McCartney 1-2-3 canon, as it were, because even though they are very different in terms of like sonically, as you say, the techniques are there and it's almost a constructed track, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and lyrically, he's gone for his sort of simple but effective approach. But then, as you say, it was written during lockdown. It kind of gives it more poignance.
Yeah.
You never used to be afraid of days like these, but now you're overwhelmed by your anxieties. Given that the time it was written in is just like, whoa.
Absolutely. Which works really well being up the octave from the rest of it. It makes it really sort of stand out, doesn't it? And also, I don't know if you read about, because the basic part of the song was just literally him driving and there was a drum beat on the radio and he started singing, I'll find my way left or right.
Singing,
which made that song. And then he obviously went and laid it down. And then it also said, I don't know, read some stuff about, you know, the song did go somewhere else, but he wasn't really happy with it. And then in the studio, he added that, the anxieties thing. And it does, like you say, it is very poignant. It is very of that time. And it's lovely to hear. I mean, again, it reminds me how fortunate we are that he's still here and he's still doing these things, but it's nice to hear his take on what was happening in lockdown, you know. It's, and it brought out an album that he wasn't expecting, we weren't expecting, which I think was so much better than Egypt Station. And I didn't mind Egypt Station, there's a lot of good stuff on it, but it's kind of true to what the Nigel Godrich thing said. It's like, put him on his own, you know, maybe with, you know, the right sort of engineers and stuff, but he is interesting on his own and he just sort of tinkers away and comes out with interesting things, rather than when you start to involve his normal live band and stuff, and I liked them, but it's more likely to become bland because you're involving people. While they may be good, they're not on the same level of creativity. You know what I mean? They're more like session musicians who are very good players, but it's just very natural, definitely.
And speaking of involving people that might be good, I want to talk here about the reimagined, so McCartney 3 reimagined in...
Well, in fact, McCartney 3 imagined. Yeah. That's the title, which is really good. Again, it's a really clever pun.
Yes. So the reworked version of this song, remixed by Beck.
Yes. Fantastic artist.
Who is, I mean, I haven't bought so much of his stuff in recent years, but certainly his early Mellow Gold and all that, those sort of albums.
Odelay, obviously.
Odelay, yeah. So I was really excited to see that Lee had gotten him on board for that. And from the remix itself to the video, which was also done by Beck.
I can find my way, I know my left from right, because we never close, I'm open day and night.
I think it was on his Instagram page. So he said, when I heard the falsetto vocal in Paul's original track, I wanted to lean further into something loose and funky. I pulled out my Hofner, because of course, and I put down a few bass lines. Everything came to life from there. And the best part, the entire experience, came just a week after I turned in the remix, when Paul called me to tell me that he'd been dancing in his kitchen to the track all week.
Yeah.
And he sort of said Paul and Nancy were at a party together and Beck was there, and then, you know, everyone had kind of turned in, all these youngsters had called it a night, and they were still up dancing and just grooving in the corner of the room.
Yeah, I believe the phrase he said was tearing it up on the dance floor.
Tearing it. Yeah. Which is just, you can just picture that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the video. Do you want to talk about the video?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, before that, I would say I almost think I might prefer the Beck version to the original.
I do.
And so I thought that, and then I went back and listened to Find My Way again. I went, the original. I went, no, I do like it. But there is a bit of a sense with the original one of, you can kind of tell how it's written. Do you know what I mean? Whereas the Beck version, so basically he's lifted the vocal out and put it into a minor key. But it's great. It's a really good, I mean, it's not surprising that Beck would build a really good groove, because that's what he does. But yeah, it's very, very cool. It really, really works. You wouldn't know, you know, what he said about the Hofner thing, you wouldn't know that Paul's not really playing on it. It just really, really works. But yeah, the video. So what they did here, if you haven't seen it, is this was co-produced by Hyperreal Digital. What they did was they essentially recreated a young version of Paul McCartney, a 60s McCartney, but a dancer, you know, throwing in things that Paul McCartney would never have done to create this great little video that is very clever, if a bit weird. I don't know if you've clocked Paul's cameo in it.
No, I don't think I did.
There's about a minute in. So this video is basically set in a hotel.
Like in a hallway, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's sort of walking through the hallway, and as it starts, and I'm sort of interested into, because like the early body language at the beginning, when he's sort of saying hello to people and waving, it's very Paul McCartney. You're going to go,
more like
I'm pretty
him.
Sure that
yeah,
could be him.
Yeah.
And then he starts to do this sort of very funky dance as he keeps going through the corridor.
Bit like Jamiroquai, isn't it?
Yes.
That sort of, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Virtual insanity sort of thing. Uh-huh. But about a minute in, while he's still in the hallway, somebody opens the door behind him, looks out, and then goes back in the room. And it's current day Paul McCartney. So he makes a small cameo. So it's worth looking out for it. And so he does all this funky dancing. And then at the very end, he takes off the mask, sort of Michael Myers Halloween style. And it's Beck underneath the thing. But obviously they've got this, you know, fantastic dancer. And it was directed by Andrew DeNuco. And it was choreographed by Tayek Phil, apparently. It's very cool. It works really well. But yeah, I do sort of think I prefer the Beck version.
I think I do.
And I guess it sort of speaks to that. It's a bit like the Fireman again, isn't it? When somebody just gets their hands on this thing, they just take it another place. And somebody like Beck, who I know has been a friend of McCartney's for quite a while, he's that same sort of, you know, if you think of McCartney 3, if you think of the ethos of McCartney 3 or McCartney 2, that is very like what I would think of Beck, what he would do, how he would write songs, how he would work. So they're sort of the perfect combination, you know. It'd be lovely. Yeah. I'd like to hear a lot more of what those two people could do together.
Yeah,
you know?
It'd be great if they did, definitely.
But okay, again, so we talk about live stuff, and as I said, the only song on McCartney 3 that he ever played live was Women and Wives once. He never played Find My Way live.
Really?
That could have been in the Glastonbury set, because that's the sort of biggest gig he did post that album. But no, it wasn't, you know. And you just think, well, why? Why not? You know, because it's like he's still a cool and interesting artist. But people who are just, you know, only bear him a peripheral attention don't know that, you know. And I know the Three Imagined album, I think that got to number one. But I don't know how well this, because this was sort of the lead single. I don't know how well it did, but it sort of should have done better, because it's cool. And as I say, I do think the Beck version makes it a better song.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe it wasn't somebody else dancing. Maybe that was really Paul. You know, maybe after dancing with that robot in the Appreciate.
He's inspired.
He's like, no, I'll do this on my own, yeah. But yeah, so that's Find My Way.
All right, so this is it. We're
at the end.
Right at the end.
I really need a wee, but I'm going to motor on through.
So 2 hours and 10 minutes in.
Yes.
And we end up at Flying to My Home.
Oh,
Yes, so this, again, is another one of those songs that until very recently wasn't really available. It's only again with this 80 singles thing that came out that, because it's one of the B-sides, this was the B-side to My Brave Face, I believe. So this came out in 1989 and wasn't included in the Flowers in the Dirt remastered thing. They didn't put it in there. Don't really know why, but now it's finally available sort of streaming. Now, I have a bit of a soft spot for this one. It's a grower. I would say it's a well-produced, well-constructed pop song in that all of the parts within it, the instrumental parts, all the little guitar licks that happen in it, are really well chosen. It's a song that he obviously cared about enough to include the lyrics in his first poetry book, Blackbird Singing, Poems and Lyrics, 1965 to 99. And it does have some good images in it. It's the band from Flowers in the Dirt. So it's Paul, Linda, Hamish Stewart and Chris Whitten's on it. I think what's interesting about it and why I like it is he's not really singing in his own style. It's a song that maybe if you glancingly looked at it, you wouldn't recognise it as being him. Mm-hmm. It starts with a sort of Brian Wilson style harmony piece, which is then linked into the song with a riff on Hammond organ, which is quite like White a Shade of Pale, which is a song that meant a lot to McCartney, I know. And then, yeah, this sort of well-constructed pop song comes out of it, which again has that sort of 80s slightly gated drums thing going on. But it's good. And it was sort of strange that it wasn't included on the remastered Flowers in the Dirt album when they included all those Elvis Costello demos and stuff. They missed it off, which is even from like the deluxe versions. I think you might have been able to get it as a download, but... But yeah, so I really like it. I like the lyrics, for example, the middle eight. I haven't been back for so long ago. Know if I'm going to recognise it. They gave the old place a new face and I'm going to take some time to size the situation up. I think it's just good. And, you know, the sky is like a painted flag above a sea of chrome. So what I'm saying is it's not one of his best songs, but it's a really good B-side.
I agree. Good B-side.
From a time when people would be excited about the B-sides. If you're a fan of an artist, you want to hear it, don't you? And this was before it got to the point where you get like sort of four-track sort of CD singles where remixes and stuff. This is just a really good additional song. And I think it could have been a single. I think it could have been... So, for example, we said about Figure of Eight. That was a single from the same album. It's kind of a bit throwaway. This would have been a much better version of a sort of more bland, but just a better song. And I think I like it a lot because it's one of those songs that was hard to get hold of. So that's partly why it's a bit of a favourite for mine.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on Flying to My Home?
I thought it was quite Lennon in places.
Yeah. Because it's quite nasal for one.
Yeah.
But I like that. And even a bit Elvis-y in places that haven't been back for so long ago. He's using his voice in different ways.
Yeah. And you said about, you know, it almost, you could mistake it for someone else. Mm. And I think that's almost like putting on a character thing again, isn't he?
Definitely, yeah.
That's a good vocal. I like it when he's a bit more experimental. I haven't got loads to say about it. I like the acoustic guitar. I think he's a great bass again.
I like the Hammond organ riff as well. I like that link between the harmony bit. It works really, really well.
Did I read somewhere that it was the like focal point of the song was originally supposed to be like the vibraphone?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Which basically is entirely removed from the mix because you don't hear it at all.
Or did they say it was sort of so low in the mix you can't even hear it?
Yeah, because once I read that thing, I think that was on the Paul McCartney project. Yeah, I listened for it and I don't think it's there.
Yeah.
It's quite swaggery. Like the bass is quite swaggery. It takes it along a certain way. But yeah, I couldn't hear the vibraphone.
Yeah, it's not my favourite from that kind of era, but as you say, I prefer it to Figure of Eight. Yeah, and I don't know why it wasn't included either.
No.
It feels too good to be just kind of...
I know, to be missed off. And also because it's a song that has a really different identity. I've just written down the word identity, you know what I mean? This song sounds very different to everything else on the album, so why not include it? And if you're not going to put it on the album, why not put it on the deluxe...
Yeah.
This is why, you know, I know like McCartney fans get very frustrated about this because these deluxe editions that you buy, they're extremely expensive. That box set I was talking about, the 80 singles, that's 600 and something pounds. And it says on the McCartney website when you go in there, you're only allowed to buy two per purchase. I mean, I was going to buy five. I was going to buy five of them. Because, you know, I basically want one in every room because I can't be asked to carry it. So... But do you know what I mean? And so you pay the money, say, for the deluxe version of Flowers in the Dirt with all those, you know, Elvis Costello demos and that. And then they miss something like that off that was just a B-side from that period. Yeah. It's weird, you know, and why? Yeah.
I was going to say, I did lyrically, I sort of picked out that same line as you. I like the, it gave the old place a new face. It's quite a nice image.
Definitely, yeah. You know, I'm like a bird at the end of the day flying to my home.
Yeah.
It's got good, strong lyrics when you actually look at it, probably better than the song itself. Mm. I think I also like it because it's one of the first ones that I bought at the time. So I have a fond memory of having it on vinyl on the 45 and listening to that specific vinyl and playing that B-side a lot and singing along to it. Because these were the first time that I was sort of hearing songs from someone that I really loved as a songwriter that were new, you know, and that was quite exciting. But yeah, so that's Flying to My Home. And that's eight songs that begin with the letter F. There were songs that we didn't get to. but I think that's quite a good mixed selection, I would say.
And do you have a highlight out of that selection?
Well, there's a few, isn't there? Because Fine Line is just a great single, a really good single. Friends to Go, Footprints, probably those three.
Yeah.
With Footprints and Fine Line fighting for the top spot. How about you?
Those three for me, and probably Footprints and Friends to Go. Probably just the two that are battling there for the top spot. Nothing on there that I'd put in the bin, but probably my lowest point is probably Figure of Eight, as we said, as we were going through.
Okay.
Just because it's the most forgettable. I still can't, it's gone out of my head again now that we've stopped talking about it. So
yeah. The only sort of positive thing I'd give for it is just don't listen to the single version. I think out of all of them, yeah, I wouldn't throw any away. For You, I'd probably put in recycling. I'd probably put like by the bin.
Yeah.
I might throw it out. You know, but I'll probably keep hold of it. But yeah, I mean, a good variety. There's a lot of different things going on there. And again, special mention to the Beck reimagining of Find My Way, which is another really great one. And it's nice to focus, as I say, more sort of solidly on the solo era of McCartney. So even though we know that Wings is, you know, solo McCartney in all but name, this is all from the period on his own. And there's a lot of variety going on there. And he even got a 12-year-old to say that he wants to fuck you, which is a worrying trend we probably shouldn't lean on too much. And if you enjoyed our podcast, you can listen to the other episodes that are available, and there'll be more to come. If you want to send us a message or the like, or just follow so you know when we're next releasing stuff, you can follow us on Twitter at McCartneyABC. We're also on Facebook if you search the McCartney McAlphabet. You can email us, paulmccartneyabc@gmail.com, or check out the podcast homepage is mccartneyabc.podbean.com. So that's just about every possible link you could have. Thank you for listening to this episode. I hope we entertained you. We passed the time. Talk about passing something. I really need to go for a wee. It's quite urgent now. But before I do that, here's a little example, a little window into what we're going to be talking about next time.
I can wait another day until I call you. You've only got my heart on a string and everything a flutter. But another lonely night might take forever. We've only got each other to blame. It's all the same to me, love, 'cause I know what I feel to be right. No more lonely nights. No more lonely nights. You're my guiding light. Day or night, I'm always there. May I never miss the thrill.
The McCartney McAlphabet is written and edited by David F. Gray and Clary Sadler, and is inspired by and features selections from the music of Paul McCartney.